This episode of Bushwick Breakaway is brought to you by you, the listener. Or I don't know why I sung that. I'm sorry that this started off so poorly. Welcome to Bushwick Breakaway. You can support the podcast by going to patreon.com/Bushwick Breakaway. You can hear our BSBOT from last week where we talk exclusively about their Nils Lundqvist ELC signing and what that means for Jack Eichel trades. On today's podcast, we have our dear friend Drew Way come on and talk about the draft coming up, the Rangers picking 15. We talk about Nils Lundqvist a bit here too, of course, along with Braden Schneider. We mentioned a lot of Gallant talk because it seems like he's heading to be the new New York Rangers head coach, and a couple Patreon questions. Okay, let's get to the show. Here he is, Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Welcome to the Bushwick Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead of patreon.com/Bushwick Breakaway. You can support Greg and I. I'm here with my co-host, Gregory. Gregory, say hello.
I would like to not. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's complain about things that really matter. You know what? You know what I don't like? Walking outside and being wet. The summer is the worst. I hate to be like going outside, just like stepping outside for a minute. It's like, oh, you know what? I need to get the mail. Oh, wow. And now I need to take a shower. Welcome to summer content, everybody. That's what
we're
doing.
While I agree with you, I would be remiss if I didn't also point out that you are soft as baby shit for thinking that this right now is actually hot.
Oh,
I challenge you to try to live 1 year in Savannah, Georgia, and then we can have this conversation.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. It's a dry. It's a different kind of heat. Maybe it's not. It's probably just probably absolutely terrible.
It is. It was the most humid and miserable experience I've ever had in my entire life. I loved living in Savannah. I'm very happy for that period of my life. But what I don't miss is feeling like I can cut humidity with a literal knife. You talk about it, doing an activity outside. It was you would open your door in Savannah and just be like, forget it. I'm not leaving my house.
It's like it's winter. Like, what's the point? It's summer. It's just winter. I stay inside. I blast the heat. I stay inside. I blast the AC. I go outside. I melt. I burn. At least in winter, I can put some layers on. Jesus.
I will say I go back and forth on this all the time because I will admit readily that it's a lot easier to warm yourself up versus cool yourself.
Big flannel
off.
Guy. Huge flannel guy.
Yeah. There are a lot of easier ways to warm yourself up than like you can't just all of a sudden make your body 10 degrees cooler regardless of how little you're wearing outside.
It's true. I wear the shorts. It's true.
At the same time, I'd rather be hot outside than cold outside. I can get through being hot. I cannot, like, my body shuts down at a certain point if I'm cold. And, you know, you die. That happens,
right,
too.
The death part?
I will also say that I very much would take a cold shower after being outside for hours any day of the week versus trying to do that hot shower after being outside in the cold. Because the cold shower, after you take it, it lingers for a while.
There is something special about the cold shower after you've been outside in like 99 degree weather.
Yeah, and like the effect of the cold shower exists beyond being in the shower. Like you are cooled off and relaxed for a while. Whereas when you're taking that hot shower, it feels amazing in the moment. But the second you turn the water off, you are freezing again. And oh, by the way, you are now freezing and naked
and
cold.
Wet. Yeah.
So it's somehow even worse than when you got into the shower.
Oh, summer's the worst. Anyway, you're listening to number one New York Ranger podcast where we talk all things Rangers all the time.
I will say I'll take summer over winter still.
I'm a winter tier one kind of guy. I think this isn't controversial. I go autumn, winter, spring, summer, I think is where I go. I have winter second. I think I like it more than spring.
I think I would admit that the fall is a little bit better than the summer. Just
fall
because
is top
more,
tier.
The temperature is more comfortable outside, but I think the seasons are perfectly lined up in my mind. Spring, summer, fall, winter.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
It's not even so much the heat. It's just in the summer, there's so many more activities that I love
you could, like,
that
go out
I
and
associate
have, like, yeah,
with the summer.
You could have like a lot of fun in summer. Everyone's like traveling, yes, and stuff like that. Everyone, yes, on my weekends is packed out. That's not the way in winter. It's usually holidays and sitting inside and being more of a relaxing person. But I've sat inside the past year. So this summer especially, I plan on being outside melting as often as possible. That brings us to our next topic, which is Gerard Gallant.
the fall of coaching candidates, if we had to say.
Yeah, he is. We've been saying on this podcast for a week where it's kind of like, I think he was always kind of the de facto hire for the Rangers. You've said it's not over till the playoffs are over.
Rod Brind'Amour sings.
Right. I still agree with you in that point. It seems like Rod's staying. I saw the picture of Rod coaching kids the day after his playoff game with Carolina. Like, I think he was coaching 10-year-olds like the next morning. He seems like he's pretty rooted in Carolina at this point in time. But if you're Jury, you have...
He's gone as far to say he has no desire to leave. The only reason he's going to leave is if they don't pay him.
Exactly. And it seems like they will, maybe not enough, but it seems like they are. In that case, Gallant, all indications, Friedman talked about this today. There was a quote that was pretty much like, yes, New York Rangers and Gallant are interested with each other. He'd be shocked if he wasn't a candidate or like the top candidate right now. They haven't had a second interview. I actually reached out to Gallant's agent last week, and I was like, hey, what's up? I host a shitty podcast about the Rangers. Can you let me know if Gallant had a second interview? He did not respond. No, not really a shocker there or a surprise. We do know the second interview has not happened yet. Tockett has had his second interview. Gallant will likely be the front runner and probably get the job. You think before the end of the playoffs now? I think we're at that point.
It'll be when Brind'Amour is decided, that's when the Rangers will decide. I think it's
as simple as that.
I think the Rangers are making their plans as if Brind'Amour is staying in Carolina, but I don't see any reason why the Rangers would be in a hurry or Gallant himself would be in a hurry until the Hurricanes decide what the hell they're doing. Because quite honestly, everybody talks about Gallant's going to get a job, and I think Gallant knows he's going to get a job. So it's about deciding what job he wants. And if it's the Rangers' job he wants before anybody else, I don't think he's going to accept the position in Seattle if that's the job he actually wants, right? So if there's no harm in the Rangers waiting on Brind'Amour because Gallant is going to allow the Rangers to wait, then they should just keep waiting. And for Gallant, maybe say the Rangers are his number one and Seattle's his number two. Well, would Carolina be his number two if Carolina all of a sudden had – an opening unexpectedly?
That's interesting.
There's just as much reason for Gallant to wait to see what Carolina does, because Carolina might need a head coach itself. So why would Gallant want to rush his decision if he would value a Carolina job over the Ranger job? Now, both parties can assume that Carolina is not going to be in the market for a head coach, but why would either party want to jump the gun is my question.
Yeah, they wouldn't. They want to see it play out. And jumping the gun might not take that long, because the Hurricanes are now down 3-1 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Cheating, by the way. It's been 7 minutes of the podcast. Absolute cheaters.
The push notification I got this weekend being like, the Lightning, amazing comeback led by, Kucherov and Stamkos.
Interesting. Like,
this push notification was tailored just to piss me off. I was trying to enjoy my Saturday. It was Belmont Day. I was having a good time, hanging out with people, doing outdoor stuff, just drinking, living my best life. And then the NHL app was like, hey, Greg Kaplan, specifically Greg Kaplan, nobody
else.
It's
weird that they wrote your name, because I got the same thing, and it said Greg Kaplan, Stamkos, and Kucherov.
But you know what's funny? I don't use my original Twitter account for anything anymore. It is locked. It is dead. It's whatever.
Literally caps locked, yes.
I can't remember the last time I used it. But for whatever reason, my phone still sends me push notifications from not even people tagging me and shit on that. Just like Twitter being like, here's a tweet you'd probably want to know. And it was the same stupid fake tweet you saw about Gerard Gallant.
The notification.
The app official.
Yeah.
And it's just like, my phone, why? What are you doing? Usually it's just like a stupid Southampton update being like, Southampton exists. And it's like, cool, Meg, I don't care in this exact moment. But this one, it was like, it sent the push notification.
And it said,
I feel like my phone would have blown up if it was actually real.
Because I was
out. 2 minutes of panic.
I was out trying to get some chores done on a Sunday night, as you do, not expecting Ranger news. And I saw it, and I got a push notification, like, New York Rangers official, Gallant head coach. And I was like, no fucking way. There's no chance. Because I'm sure I would have gotten a couple texts or tags or something at this point in time. And I opened up Twitter, and I was like, oh, this is a fake account. How is Twitter push notificating me a fake account? Come on, Bird App. You want me to buy Twitter Blue in like a month? You're giving me fake news? Come on, man. Yeah, real rough. It's weird to... I've kind of over the fake announcements. Been over them for quite a while at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm over them. I don't know who... Like, what do you... What's the end game?
It's a funny gotcha once in a while, but I wouldn't consider hiring Gallant like a funny gotcha. Shit, Greg, we're hardly... like excited about him getting hired in first place.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I got you. Super excited. Like an actual good gotcha is like someone do not do this. If someone like had like a good Capo Caco trade thing and got me and then got me on the reaction. Yeah, that's good. That's nice. Don't do that. Please. But yeah, that would be good. But the Gallant thing, who cares? Whatever.
Okay. Yeah, and I feel like I don't even know if people at this point, I don't think a whole lot of people, I don't see them if they're doing it being like, oh, these guys just fucking hate Gerard Gallant. Because I feel like our messaging on Gallant has been pretty consistent from day one, which is of the known candidates, I think we'd prefer him more than others.
He was my number one going into the all the coaches that were named from the Larry Brooks article.
Like, if the Rangers hired Bruce Boudreau instead of Gerard Gallant, I'd consider that a misstep. If they hired Claude Julien, John Tortorella, Bob Hartley, absolutely Mike Babcock. But any of the – even Rick Tocchet, any of the coaches that were out there, if the Rangers were going to hire a coach from the pool of 45 white men, Gerard Gallant was the one I would feel most comfortable with them hiring. I was pushed today by a friend of the show, Adam Etcetera, on why I'm so not down on Gallant, just indifferent.
I really like the way you said et cetera, too. I do like Adam.
Et cetera.
Et cetera.
Good dude. Good guy. I like – he makes me think of things in a more critical way as opposed to being like
– you're an idiot.
Here's my thought and you're an idiot. So I respect that. And I think my Gallant problem is I have a hard time rounding the corner – on saying he's had a lot of coaching success when really he had what he did the first year with Vegas.
That's legit.
Deserves praise because none of us thought Vegas would be that good that immediately. But I also have a hard time coming to terms with how much of that was Gallant and how much of that was all of us were just idiots. And I, you know, it's probably a good amount of it being Gallant and some amount of it being idiots. But I go back and then people also point to the Florida team, which was young, but you look at that roster and you also take into account everything that roster has been able to do without Gallant. Now it always helps that they essentially went from Gallant to Quenneville. So it's not exactly like they've had a bad coach in between. But I almost think we were definitely dumb for thinking that Florida team wasn't ready to take a leap. And I that's why, like...
with the amount of young talent around it?
Yeah, like Baby Ekblad, Huberdeau, Trocheck, Barkov, Yager in the twilight when he's still doing all these different things that he was doing. That team had, like, such a good mix of veterans who could still go and kids who were ready to leap. Now...
which is, like, what the Rangers are.
Right, and that's part of the question is like the argument that more people should be making is that Gerard Gallant is the reason why those players took the leap and why they are still good today. And it's obvious that Gallant was able to do some of that with Vegas. Though again, it's almost like I forgot that the first year in Vegas sticks out in my mind so well that I forgot that the second year was kind of, they were still very good. But it was a quick playoff exit. And it's almost like, in my mind, I almost thought he went to the Western Conference Finals and then the next year got fired. I forgot that he had an entire season.
That was the season
with Vegas.
It's kind of crazy we don't remember it because the pandemic made us feel nothing. I have no feelings for many, many months. But that year leading up to the said pandemic that we just talked about, I think there was, 11 coaches fired, something, some ridiculous number where it was like David Quinn suddenly was a top like 14 veteran coach in the league, despite being the coach in the Rangers for 2 years at this point in time.
Right, so right. But there was the Western Conference Finals year with the Golden Knights was 2018. And then he was there the entire 2018-19 season and the Golden Knights were good, but forgettable. And then he got fired mid season the next year, which was the pandemic season.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's, I'm saying I completely forgot that the Western Conference Finals year wasn't just 2019. Forgot that there was that entire second year in Vegas where, again, a good team, but not the Vegas we saw the year before. And it's not like they got Mark Stone that year. Last year wasn't the first. I don't think last year was the first year Mark Stone was in Vegas, but now I'm going to check my math.
I don't believe they got him year one. I think it was year two.
No, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't year one. I think it was year two when they didn't go very far.
That was with the Sharks. Isn't that correct? They went to like,
yeah, no, they traded for Stone in 2018-19 during Gallant's second year. And then Gallant's third year is when Mark Stone decided to become maybe the best player in the NHL.
Yeah.
If he wasn't already.
He's pretty good. Who knew? Nice job, Ottawa. They're killers. Impressive. They're really killers. Yeah, so with Gallant, I'm with you where it's people keep thinking that we're defending David Quinn. And that's what all we've heard all season is like, yeah, why are you defending David Quinn so often and so eagerly? That's not the case. We've called him average many times. I'm still surprised he got fired. Hell, I'm still surprised that JD and Gorton are gone. Remember that happening? Wow, everybody, clap for that one. Now, I just feel like Gallant is sort of a known quantity. I think you can add some value, and I know you'll disagree with this, or there's perceived value in what he did with the exhibition games in the Worlds, taking Canada down from 0-3, bringing it back to the championships. Braden Schneider is on that team. A couple other Rangers also. Congratulations and good for them. I think perception-wise, that gains Gallant more value. I don't think it actually changes who he is as a coach. I don't think it's made him a better coach, et cetera, et cetera. That was not a pun on Adam, in case we were wondering, et cetera. But in this case, I do think it teams around the league at least start to take a little more notice. And maybe that raises his value in that case. It seems like every single team that has a coaching vacancy is going to want Gallant. Obviously, the Rangers will be the front runner because of the talent they have right now.
And it's also New York.
And it's New York.
Just that simple. Yeah, and again, I think the other point that people get confused with us is I think we both think Gallant will be better than Quinn. Where you and I disagree or stray from where a lot of our contemporaries are when it comes to Gallant is I think Gallant will be at most like a 10% improvement on Quinn, which to me isn't enough. I need something more. But I think Buck Showalter is a better manager than Aaron Boone? Probably. But if I'm the Yankees, I wouldn't want to fire Aaron Boone for Buck Showalter. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. I almost feel bad for Yankee fans.
I don't. They're fine.
I mean, yeah, they've won every championship on earth, I guess, never mind.
Not just that. I read the Rosenthal piece today, and he's like, yeah, Yankee fans are tired of Brian Cashman, but also Brian Cashman has been general manager for 23 years, and they've never had a losing record. That must be nice. I wonder what that's like. Yeah, I'm. We'll get the baseball later. I want to stay on Gallant.
Yeah, let's stay on Gallant. My apologies.
Yeah, you should.
How dare
for the
I?
Record, that was a Yankee comparison, not a Met comparison. So eat your butts, everybody.
Oh, eat your butts out, everybody.
Yeah.
I need to say that more often.
The other thing is, I admit that Gallant, I don't think, is a significant upgrade from Quinn. And, like, if I had to put other guys, like Boudreau, I think would be a small upgrade from Quinn, but less than an upgrade than Gallant. I don't think Tocchet would be an upgrade from Quinn. I don't think Hartley would be an upgrade from Quinn. Tortorella, again, the podcast would never be better. And that's hard for me to square when it comes with Tortorella. There's a big part of me that wants Torts because we would just kill it. We would crush. We'd be number one. Fuck you, spitting chicklets. We're finally taking your ass down. Like Tortorella every day would give us, he'd get up there in front of a press conference and be like, guys, I'm not fucking talking about the French Canadian today. He's a fucking superstar from what you tell me, and I just don't see it in practice. So I'm fucking tired of having to talk about this fucking kid because he went first overall. And I'm like, Torts, I need that. Give that to me. I need to be able to react.
If that actually happened, like legitimately, the speech you just gave actually happened, it would be four episodes. Like just that speech. He could have stopped right there and walked off with the four lines you just said. Four episodes of content. We could do 4 hours on it.
Well, he'd also there'd also be one where like Brooks would finally ask him a question in a scrum, and Tortorella's response would be, "I don't know, what's Josh Anderson up to?" And yep. then that would be a fucking week, God. And we'd be back on that. He would give us so much.
I don't know what to expect from Gallant. I expect it to be boring.
I think he's boring as shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I expect it to be boring. I expect the players to still be quite fun and entertaining. This team has a lot of personality, no doubt about that. I mean, whatever you want to call Kapokaka's personality, I love it. But Lafreniere obviously has a lot of personality. Chris Kreider, if he's still here, a lot of personality. We'll see what happens with the expansion draft. There's a lot up in play. At least for the players, it'll be a lot of fun. But I think Gallant's going to keep things really under wraps. He will not be nearly as fun as Quinn was when it comes to quotes or whips or anything like that.
That's the crazy part, too, is as much as I don't – like, Quinn
– Hey, Quinn might coach in Buffalo. That's nuts.
I still don't understand. I can't wrap my mind around how Quinn is not Columbus's head coach. If Davidson didn't want to fire Quinn and Gorton, I understand why Gorton won't be hired, because Davidson has a long working relationship with Kekalainen and they seem to get along. They both seem to understand what needs to happen in Columbus. That's fine and good. I can't wrap my mind around why, if Davidson was ready to lose his job defending Gorton and Quinn, why he hasn't just immediately given Quinn a job. That one I struggle with, Ryan. I'll be perfectly blunt with you. If Columbus hires someone that isn't Quinn, that's going to make me ask a lot of questions that I don't think will ever be answered.
I'm kind of with you, where if it was his guy, right, why wouldn't he just re-sign? Is it because maybe he's not ready to give him 5 years? But what, then again, what's CBJ kind of up to? I almost expect the Rangers and CBJ to make a deal.
I think Seth Jones has decided what Columbus is up to. I think they need to strip down. I don't think they have a choice.
Right. I actually got a text from somebody that follows and supports the show that was like, what do you think about Seth Jones for the New York Rangers? And I was like, I don't really think about it. Like, I'm not sure. Yeah, like, he only has 1 year.
I saw you mentioned Werenski this week.
Yeah, I got a hot tip from somebody I've been talking to for a long time. And
yeah,
pretty much it.
But the problem with, first of all, I think Seth Jones is a little bit Seth Jones is one of those players where the hockey men love him. He does everything that the hockey men like, and the analytics community can't stand him.
Correct.
Because he's not good defensively, which is his job. So it's like Seth Jones is one of those players where the casual fan will see that their team has acquired Seth Jones and thinks it's this big, great, wonderful move. And then you're going to see immediately 27 smart think pieces about how Seth Jones will never live up to the value of this trade because he's actually not good. So it's a tough one to turn the corner on there, Ryan. But also, I want to make this perfectly clear. I like Werenski. I think that would be a super interesting move for the Rangers, just like it would be if they wanted to do, say, Charlie McAvoy or whatever. But
yeah, well, Charlie McAvoy, I would love that. Come on.
Yeah. I don't think as many assets as the Rangers have, I don't think they want to fire off two shots this offseason. I think they want to make one super big move, and they want to unload the chamber on this one big move.
Really?
And if you're going to unload the chamber on this,
yeah.
Well, I can't see the Rangers giving up what it would take to get Werenski and giving up what it would take to get a top six forward. So if the Rangers are going to have to choose, I think they're going to I don't think they're going to ignore the defense. I agree on that point. I think they're going to get a notable defenseman. But I don't – I think the star they're bringing in, I'd be very shocked if the star was a defenseman. And Werenski is in that star category.
See, I think with CBJ rebuilding – and this is just, I don't know, it's not conspiracy, but I'm just connecting the dots. You watched the draft video. You saw how much that JD really loved Schneider. I would be curious to see if they gave him like Schneider and a pick for Werenski. He's only got a year left. So it's $5 million. That's it.
Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong. Is he not a restricted free agent still?
He's only 23, so I'm assuming he is a restricted free agent. So that would be the case.
I believe he is as well. I think he has another extension coming his way.
Yes.
So it's – yes, he has. He's a restricted free agent after this year?
Yes, yes. He's 23, so absolutely. I'll double check right now, but that's where we're at. Thanks for chilling the podcast. We both fucking Google like idiots.
Google. It's not Google. It's called Cat Friendly. We should have the guys from Cat Friendly on the show one of these days. We use their website so much.
I'm on Puckpedia right now, actually.
Oh, wow. Look at us.
I know.
Where are you at, Rensky? Were you hurt? Yeah, he's our restricted free agent in 2022.
Yes, sir.
So
he is.
He's got another payday coming his way, buddy. Yeah, I just think Werenski's the kind of player and the talented player where it's to an extent, again, he's not on a Panarin level, but Werenski is the type of player where not only contenders should be in on Werenski, right? Like, he has appeal to every team in the league, regardless of where they are on their path. Like, why wouldn't the Detroit Red Wings want to get Zach Werenski now, even though they're not ready to compete? Why wouldn't the LA Kings want to get Zach Werenski now, even if they think they're 2 to 3 years away? So you open yourself up in terms of players you could trade for and packages you could receive to a different, wider audience when you're talking about guys like Werenski, which is why, honestly, I think there's a possibility Werenski might cost more in a trade than Eichel, just because more teams will be involved, the price tag is cheaper, and the risks associated are much lower. So I can't see the Rangers doing a trade that, to me, it would take a substantial price to get Werenski, mm-hmm. and it would also take a substantial price to address your top six. And to me, the priority will always be top six first. Get that guy, whoever it is. I think the Rangers are going to make a significant move to address their defense. I don't think the bottom pairing next year is going to be Zach Jones and Nils Lundqvist. We've said this
a million
times over.
A million. My voice is cracked.
But I do think, and again, this is not the guy I'm saying it'll be. I'm just saying it'll be someone more like Alec Martinez defensively than it would be Zach Werenski in my mind. I can't see the Rangers making their big swing on a defenseman. It just kind of flies in the face of how this team is built.
Yeah, and that's
it. Would be like the Chiefs going out there acquiring a quarterback as their big move.
That's what everyone has kind of said to, or everyone we've talked to, Brooks, Vince, anybody with knowledge about the teams, they want to switch it up in the top six, aka probably get Jack Eichel. All right, why don't we go to our guest?
Oh shit, it's already 7 o'clock. When the fuck did that happen?
Yeah,
man?
Crazy, right? Just having fun. Let's go to our guest real quick, and then we'll come back and answer some Patreon questions. How's about that, Gregory?
Sounds good.
Tran.
Even though I told you 7:15, right?
Do you know how? Okay, so we're going to go behind the scenes real quick. Right now, we're going to transition of the show. And then in 15 minutes, we're going to talk to Drew. Transition. Hey, we're back with our first and only guest of the day. It's maybe the most ever guest on Blue Shirts Breakaway history, our friend Drew Way, prospect expert for Blue Shirts Breakaway. Drew, what's up, man?
What's going on? I like that. The most ever guest. Very eloquently.
It's either you or Shayna. We have Shayna on a lot.
Yeah, it's one of you two. I'd be curious. I'm sure someone will maybe tell us. Don't do this.
I tell you guys, I'm a cocky shit, but I'm always more than happy to be in the same conversation as Shayna because despite how highly I view myself, she is certainly smarter than me. So I will take that as a compliment.
The queen herself, of course. And I'm sure she'll be back on the podcast in like 3 weeks. So there you go. Let's get right to this. The Rangers got pick number 15 in last week's lottery. I think the consensus is that they will not be making that pick. I'm wondering right off the bat if you disagree. We've talked about targets that they've had personally and offline a lot. Do you think they'll be making the pick?
Hold on one sec here. I'm opening up my freezer to pour myself a little bit more vodka as I talk.
Yeah, no, this is important. Yeah, get ready.
I'll say this. Like, I'm not quite with Greg when Greg's jokes about it's like a 0.01% chance that they'll make it, but I would say slightly under 50% likely that they're making this pick based off of conversations I've had with various folks.
I don't know why you think I'm joking. That is my honest to God serious number. I think it's a 99% chance the Rangers trade this pick. Like, that's not me trying to say something for shock value. That's what I legitimately feel.
I'll tell you this. I think there's a 99% chance, more than that, that the pick is on the table for trade. But come on, we know the way these fucking idiot NHL GMs are, always complaining about how hard it is to make trades and blah, 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 blah. I'm sure the pick is very much on the table. TSN or whoever's doing their draft board, or their trade board, and what are the top most likely things to be traded, the New York Rangers first round pick is top of that list. But there's a big difference between what the Rangers want to do and what will actually happen, as we've learned.
I think the scenario we could see where it doesn't get traded is the team, notably maybe the Buffalo Sabres or a team of that ilk, will ask for a 2022 pick, hoping they get a better shot, or the Rangers somehow flounder after Jack Eichel is a Ranger. In that case, because the 2022 draft is, and correct me if I'm wrong, a much better caliber of draft.
It is a much better caliber of draft, but I'll be honest, I don't think your typical NHL GM is thinking this way. Like, generally speaking, it's kind of like the way the time value of money works, right? Like, getting money now and then be able to invest in it is always more valuable than getting money in the future. And I think most NHL GMs are kind of just looking at it that way. And so even the fact that the 2022 NHL draft is indisputably much stronger, especially at the top of the 2021 draft, I would say that at best, they are valuing those two picks equally, if not just saying that give me the 2021 so we can use it now.
Drew, before I do want to talk to you about Nils Lundqvist at some point, but I want to stay on the draft first. Before we get talking into specifics about what the Rangers would or what any team would do at 15, is there a plausible explanation for why Owen Power will not be the number one overall pick?
I mean, so again, you ask a good question in that, you know, there's a big difference between what I and many of my ilk in like the hobby scouting community feel and what NHL 200 hockey men GMs feel. In my opinion, I think you could make a reasonable argument for any of six or seven different guys to go number one. But you know, Bob McKenzie, in terms of, if you want to know what will likely happen in the NHL draft, Bob McKenzie's scout poll is far and away the most accurate thing you can look for. And his scouts unanimously ranked Owen Power number one. And so just given that, Owen Power's probably overwhelmingly likely to go number one. I personally right now have him ranked number one, but I do think the notion that he's on a tier of his own at number one and should be a unanimous number one selection is fucking ridiculous.
Isn't it a little, if you're in Seattle, pretend you're in Seattle, you're excited for hockey, basketball has left you, you won this year's lottery to go to number two, and obviously that's good and everything, but you just said you could pick up to six players at that number one spot. Now, Seattle, if you're a Seattle fan, you only could have one more lottery win in the next 4 years, and you're probably not going to be good right off the rip like Vegas was. Isn't that kind of a bit of a bummer?
Yeah, what a stupid rule they put into place. That is a bummer. And, I said I think it's ridiculous that Owen Power is kind of unanimously considered the number one pick. Again, he's deserving of being selected one, but there's a big difference between being deserving of being selected one and being like the unanimous no-brainer number one. At number two, I found a lot of people are just like penciling in Matthew Beniers, or Matty Beniers, as people call him now, as like the presumptive pick there. And even that, I'm like, yeah, sure, Beniers is more than deserving of being selected too, but to be the clear choice is kind of ridiculous.
Where would Beniers go in, say, Lafreniere's draft? So Lafreniere, Byfield, Stutzel. I saw that Owen Power might be number four in that draft, maybe even lower. Is Beniers like a much lower class of prospect than those top four?
Much lower, maybe no, but like Beniers certainly wouldn't go. I wouldn't take Beniers ahead of any of those three you mentioned. And then if you're like looking at the draft results beyond that, number four was Lucas Raymond. I'd rather have Lucas Raymond than Matthew Beniers. Five was Jake Sanderson. In my opinion, that was a reach. So I'd probably take Beniers over Jake Sanderson. Then you have like Jamie Drysdale, Alexander Holtz. I mean, honestly, like Beniers would probably be on a tier of like 5 to 10 in last year's draft, if you ask me. And Owen Power, similarly, like I would rather have Lucas Raymond, who was taken 4 by the Red Wings, over Owen Power. And so at best, I personally would rank Power 5th in last year's class as well.
That makes sense.
Drew, I have a hard time saying who the Rangers should target at 15 just because it's such an ambiguous pick to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many players that could be available or couldn't be available. So instead, I'm going to word my question this way. Is there a clear wrong answer for the New York Rangers at 15? Of that crew that's going to be available then? I'm not talking about a guy who's like a 7th-round pick that the Rangers just decide to take 15th overall. Of the people firmly in the top 20 in your mind, is there a clear wrong pick in your mind that the Rangers could make?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one would be going with a goalie. Like, there are two goalies that are likely going to go in the lottery of the draft this year, and going with one of those goalies would clearly be a mistake. Another guy that, like, you know, some kind of your traditional talking heads love, but, you know, more people meet more forward. Sorry if you're hearing that. My son just got up and started pushing buttons on my phone. There's a defensive prospect. there's defensive. Definitely, hold on a second. Sorry about that. But yeah, the two goalies, like I said, would definitely be a mistake. And then there's a defensive prospect out of Russia who named Daniil Chayka, who some have him very high. Like, if you look at Bob McKenzie's list, Bob McKenzie has Chayka at, I think, 18 or 19 in that range. And he's kind of in the mold of the defenseman that the Rangers, under at least JD and Gorton, would love. You know, he's big, physical, tough, all that. But he's kind of like what I said about Braden Schneider last year. Like, he, that doesn't necessarily mean he's great of a prospect. And similar to Schneider, like, I have him clearly as a second round draft grade. And I could certainly see a scenario where someone takes him in the mid to late teens. So I would consider that to be a clear wrong pick. Another one, there's a center by the name of Zachary Bolduc, who is a center for Rimouski. And, you know, he's a good player, but on paper, I think he looks a lot better than he is in reality, because a lot of his statistics he's put up over the years were inflated by a winger that he played with by the name of Alexis Lafreniere.
Interesting. I want to get back to Schneider in a second and what you think about him nowadays after he's done so much to improve his stock by winning medals and cups and all that. But what, the number one overall pick, we'll get to that. Number one overall pick that was supposed to be for this draft was Atu Rautti. But Rautti has seemingly fallen out of favor. He's fallen all the way down to 20 on Bob McKenzie's scouting poll. What exactly happened to drop him so far during the last year?
Yeah, I mean, so first, Atu Rautti. So his last name is Rautti. And yeah, what happened is he honestly didn't have a good two seasons in a row now. He hasn't really been that good. 3 years ago, so in his draft D-2 season, he was a remarkable prospect, considered the clear number one in this draft class. He's a, you know, two-way center who has a ton of offensive upside. You know, at the time, was, you know, put up incredible production for a 16-year-old in Finland, and was just honestly two years ago was considered the no-brainer. This is the gem of this draft class, and then he put up two disappointing seasons in a row. And then, you know, your old colleague at The Athletic, Scott Wheeler, just published an excellent article. I recommend anyone check it out if you have a subscription, about how Atu Rautti admitted that his passion for the game kind of dwindled, and all the circumstances with the pandemic and other things, and the pressure and other things going on, made him not lose his love for the sport, but certainly his passion for it dwindled a bit. But recently he feels he's had a resurgence and it's getting more focused and is ready. And so it's a long story short to your answers, you know, why has he dropped? Because he hasn't been all that good. If you look at his numbers, like, they just, his underlying metrics are actually pretty good. His possession stats, his stuff like that are pretty solid in Liga. But his box score stats are, you know, average at best for a, you know, for what you would expect from someone of his caliber and pedigree.
If the Rangers keep the 15th pick and take Rautti at 15, do you think it's earlier than October 20th or after October 20th when Rangers old man Facebook takes those quotes and start using them against him?
Yeah, it's fine. October 20th, that's my anniversary. But yeah, I mean, it's a good question. For the record, I'm perfectly happy with the Rangers taking Rautti at 15. Should he be in discussion for number one anymore? No. But I am perfectly happy taking a swing at him. And even the disappointing seasons he's had, he's still a good two-way center that I think could be quite successful in the NHL and is more NHL ready than most in this range. But yeah, that said, you know, the way jackasses on Rangers Facebook act, like, you know, if an American prospect is underwhelming, it's fine. But if it's a European prospect, I mean, some soft Euro, and the Rangers are idiots for continuously drafting these quote-unquote soft Euros.
I kind of feel like this, and maybe this is not really an apt comparison, but it's when the Knicks passed on, and I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound here, Knicks fans, I promise, but when the Knicks passed on Michael Porter Jr., who I was I wasn't like a prospect nerd for that, but he fell right past them, and he was the number one prospect in that class until the back injury. Now, I know it's a back injury, it's serious, but he's turned out to be quite the player. I think the Rangers would hope for the same thing to happen with Attu.
But I'll remind you of this, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the Nuggets took him is because they were the team in the unique position where if Porter just turned into a nothing, they could be okay with it because they had everything else. Right. Whereas the Knicks, you would have needed Porter or whoever you took. Like, Kevin Knox not working is a problem in and of itself. But that pick needed to be something of a more certain outcome. If the Nuggets didn't have that pick, Porter just would have kept falling to the next team that would have had the ability to take a player that could take that big of a swing.
Yep.
Considering at that time, people didn't think Porter was going to play basketball again. Forget about being a star in the NBA. There's legitimate questions that he would ever play an NBA minute. And that is basketball with Greg. Now back to Drew.
Yeah, I'll say this. There are legitimate questions that Kevin Knox would never play an NBA minute because he wasn't good enough to either. So if you're going with that line of logic.
That might be a little hyperbolic. That's all I'm going to say.
It might be a little hyperbolic, but Kevin Knox was a fucking workout hero who the Knicks fell in love with because he jumped really high in a goddamn gym with nobody else in there. The Kevin Knox pick was stupid at the time, and
can't disagree with that. They should have taken either of the Bridges. Either of the Bridges would have been a better pick.
I think the other player we wanted was Dennis Smith Jr. That really worked out. So,
that was a different draft too, by the way.
Was it? Damn.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That was the Niddle Keener.
Oh, that was the Frank draft.
Yeah.
And they should have taken Donovan Mitchell that draft, which is what everybody was saying. And that's not the problem.
Ratu, that would be great. Like I said, I'm all for taking Ratu at 15. And to reveal behind the curtain a little bit, my son's sitting here yelling at my dog right now. To reveal behind the curtain a little bit, you know, when Greg asked me if I wanted to pop on today, I said, hey, you know, is there anything you want me to prep for a bit? And he's like, we'll just talk about potential possibilities at 15 in the unlikely event that the Rangers take it. So I looked at things. I was like, all right, so who would I be okay with taking at 15? That's who's one of six names I jotted down in my notes here. So again, just to reiterate, like it's a wide open draft. And if you're going to ask me anything, what do I want the Rangers to do at 15 if they're picking at 15? My answer is trade the fuck back.
Yeah. So this comes to the question I'm most curious about. Usually you do, maybe you put the tiers up already, and my apologies if I don't have them in front of me. Where would you, where's the second tier start for you in this draft, and how deep does it go?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question, and to, you know, we put out initial rankings a little while ago. This morning, actually, me, George, and Rich were just chatting, in our little group chat about what's the timing we want to do with the next rank. So it'll probably be up at the end of June. But I've been putting a lot of work into it recently. And the way the tiers go is, you know, honestly, tier one, again, I'm still working on it, trying to figure things out. But the top tiers, I'm probably going to have to like 1 to 8, which is crazy. Because usually the top tier is like 1, 2, maybe 3 guys. And then beyond that, the next tier, you know, probably somewhere from like 9 to almost 20 or so. Jeez. And then from 20, it's like 20 to like 40 or 45. It's like, again, it's incredibly wide open. And it's not just because of like the cliches that some say with the pandemic and all those issues with scouting. Like, even if all these guys played and we had more viewings and stuff like that again, it would still be pretty wide open just because there isn't that top tier talent to help define some of the tiers, and there's a lot of just good players that all have like one or two major issues that prevent you from elevating them from good to great prospects. And like when I was putting my notes together for this, like I found it remarkable that like over half of the first round, like the big knock on them is like they're not great skaters. And it's so weird. Usually when you're talking first round prospects, like these guys are all phenomenal skaters. And this year at the top is riddled with players that have skill or they have, you know, work ethic, all these different traits, but a lot of them are lacking skating, which is crazy in today's game.
We've talked about Adam, et cetera, a little bit on this podcast already, Drew. So why don't we have the Braden Schneider conversation now? How different is your opinion D+1 from draft day of Braden Schneider?
Good question. And I appreciate that Adam reached out asking this, and he is pretty funny where I think he's just having some fun, and you know, he's an informed fan, and I give him credit for it. I appreciate people that can give you shit without being a dickhead about it, and he's exactly that. He He's good at kind of pushing back and giving me some shit, but he's always reasonable about it. So I like that. But yeah, my answer is, did I throw a bit of a temper tantrum, or did I throw a lot of a temper tantrum on that draft reaction pod last year? Yeah, absolutely. Would I change much of what I said outside of the hyperbolic nature of some of my comments? No, I wouldn't. At the time, my big issue with Snyder was that, you know, he's a good player, but I felt that a lot of what made him a great WHL defenseman, I questioned whether it could translate to the NHL. A lot of his success relies on the fact that he's bigger, stronger, more mature than a lot of the players he's going up against, and that is still the case. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal WHL defenseman, but I think there are legitimate reasons to worry about how well that will translate to the NHL. I think for sure he's an NHL defenseman. And so by just that logic alone, yes, I probably should have had him a little bit higher than I had him last year. I think last year I had him ranked in like the, you know, high 50s, whereas now I'd probably have him in, you know, the late 30s, early 40s. But again, I stand by my statement that I did not view him as a first round talent. And despite the good season he had and all the team success he's had, I still don't. Nothing's really changed my mind. He's still a very good junior level defenseman who is tough and physical and plays good in his own zone and has decent hands in the offensive zone, but he still gets absolutely fucking walked by really talented opposition forwards. And, you know, he's a good skater for his size, but I have questions about how that might translate to the NHL. His gap control is okay, but he really struggles against faster, more skilled of opposition forwards. And so it's, you know what, is he going to be an NHL defenseman? Yes. Is he going to be a top pair NHL defenseman? I would still definitely bet no.
I guess that brings us to Nils Lundqvist, right? Which is signed his ELC with the Rangers. If he doesn't get traded and go to play somewhere else, and that, let's start right there. Do you think Nils Lundqvist plays a game for the New York Rangers?
I mean, it's hard to say. I don't have any inside information. I would say this. Nils Lundqvist is the Rangers' best prospect right now. Braden Schneider is their second best defensive prospect for sure, despite, you know, again, me saying that the critiques I had, he's still a very good prospect. Braden Schneider is the Rangers', in my opinion, clear-cut second best defensive prospect. I would put him ahead of Zach Jones slightly, but on the same tier. I would definitely put him ahead of Matthew Robertson, but Nils Lundqvist is, in my mind, unequivocally, the Rangers' best prospect right now. He put up all sorts of records for under 21 defensemen in the SHL. He does everything right. Like, people think just because he's a European defenseman who puts up points that he's weak in his own zone. Bullshit. I'll throw this back to these people that throw me on Twitter. Go watch him play. Go watch the games.
Use your eyes.
He's actually a fantastic. Yeah, seriously, Nils Lundqvist, if you watch Nils Lundqvist play, he's a fantastic transitional defenseman, and he's very, very good in his own zone as well, and he is an elite possession-driving offensive defenseman. You could easier make the argument that Nils Lundqvist is the best defensive prospect in all of hockey than you can make the argument that Braden Schneider is a better prospect than Nils Lundqvist.
Wow. I mean, that does say a lot.
But to answer your question, I got no idea if he's ever going to play a game for the Rangers, because I have no idea, you know, if they're training for Jack Eichel. It all depends on Buffalo's new front office, whoever the hell is. Kevin Adams still in charge?
Yeah, he's still there.
Does he value the big, tough, physical North American defenseman in Braden Schneider, or does he value the uber talented defenseman who is a countrymate of Rasmus Dahlin?
How about this for a conundrum that I didn't prepare you for that you might not have an answer for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be a comparable prospect to Nils Lundqvist that's been traded recently that would show us this is what these level of prospects are actually worth on the trade market? Does one exist?
Eric Brandstrom. Eric Brandstrom's the answer there. And Brandstrom was the centerpiece in a trade for Mark Stone.
Well, there's your answer. That's a good one.
There's my answer. I wasn't expecting it that easy. I was expecting you to think about it for a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, it is. And right now, Nils Lundqvist is a significantly more valuable asset than Eric Brandstrom is at this moment, because Brandstrom has disappointed many since that trade. But in terms of how Brandstrom was viewed at the time he was dealt, yes, that's the comparison. And keep in mind, most teams don't deal their top prospects. usually if a team is dealing one of their prospects, it's because they think there might be an issue with him. Teams hold on to their top prospects like it's gold. But yeah, Brännström's the comp there, and he was traded for Mark Stone, who was one of the 10 best players in the NHL, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's not really an opinion. That's the fact. I guess my last question for you, Drew, is how are you going to feel when Gerard Gallant coaches the Rangers?
That's all right. I mean, Gallant is overrated by many, but he's a fine coach. He's a great tactical coach. He's a great in-game coach. Honestly, if you could combine the best attributes of Gerard Gallant with the best attributes of David Quinn, you would have a phenomenal NHL coach.
Yeah, you'd probably have Barry Trotz there, man.
You'd have a good-looking Barry Trotz.
Hold on. Are we saying Barry Trotz isn't a good-looking man?
Everybody loves Squirtle, bro. Everybody.
Name one person who doesn't like Squirtle.
Squirtle's wife.
Okay.
Is everything okay at home, Drew? Should that be our next question?
The people that have to see Squirtle naked are the ones that probably aren't big fans.
Now, when a turtle is naked, does he have to be completely out of the shell? Can a turtle be naked still in the shell?
I think so.
You know what? I feel like we just discovered the new is a hot dog a sandwich question. That's what we just
is a turtle naked in the shell? Interesting.
The shell, I believe, I actually read into this once. I believe like the shell is like, in essence, it's skeleton. So you can't just like remove the shell from the turtle. And so, someone listening to this will probably fucking at me and tell me how much of a dope I am for saying that. But anyway, yeah.
Watch the turtles, Drew. Use your eyes.
David Quinn is the guy that players love playing for. By all accounts, I know for a fact by speaking with people close to the situation that Pavel Buchnevich adores David Quinn and attributes David Quinn to much of the progress he's made over the past couple of years. And in fact, was going to ask for a trade until the Rangers fired Alain Vigneault and then hired David Quinn. A lot of the players, especially the younger players, like people criticize Quinn for his treatment of some of the younger players. Most of the younger players in particular love Quinn. They feel like he's a great communicator, a great player's coach. Gerard Gallant, but Quinn, you know, struggles with the in-game tactics. I don't think that's breaking any news there. Gerard Gallant is the opposite. He's a prickly asshole who pisses off most of the people that work with him, especially those in the front office, because he feels he deserves more power than he really should have. But he's in the conversation for one of the best in-game tacticians in the game. So if you were to combine David Quinn's ability as a personnel manager with Gerard Gallant's in-game tactician abilities, you would have a phenomenal NHL coach.
I don't really have a rebuttal to that. In your opinion, Drew, the Babcocks aside, the Tortorellas aside, is there someone that would worry you as the wrong opinion, the wrong candidate that we aren't talking more about? In other words, I could just ask you bluntly, would you feel fine if it was Rick Tocchet?
I'd be okay if it's Rick Tocchet. It's hard to judge. You can make arguments on both sides of how he did in Arizona. Some people say, oh, they didn't do enough to give him, enough there. But then you can easily be like, they signed back Oliver Ekman Larson. They traded for Taylor Hall. They traded for Phil Kessel. By and large, my understanding of Rick Tocchet is he's a pretty good, personnel manager. He tends to, he's defensive oriented, but tries to kind of let his players play their own game. And he's not a micromanager or anything like that. And so for those reasons, is Tocchet someone that gets me excited? No. But is he someone that I'm going to sit here and pull out the pitchforks over if the Rangers hire him? No. Like, I'd certainly be willing to give him a chance to see how he does. Whereas if the Rangers hired Patrick Waugh, I'd be up in fucking arms over that, because that would just be idiotic.
With you on that one. All right, Greg, any final questions for our dear friend?
What was for dinner tonight, and what did Declan spit up, is my next question.
Oh, no, Declan's little accident was at daycare, so that was nothing about spitting up. He recently potty trained and decided at the end of just before my wife picked him up that he's going to shit all over himself, and she had to help clean it up because of the timing.
Isn't that just a nice reference for the Rangers season? So close. Well, seems like things were coming together, and right before everything got going, just shit yourself.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. Yeah, before you let me go, let me just read off a couple of the names of guys that, at 15, are names that I want people to keep in mind if the Rangers still have their pick. Bear with me. All these are centers. I specifically focus on centers, given some of the needs and the pipeline and whatnot. Mason McTavish is one. He's a guy that's a huge riser recently. Probably will go in the top 10 now, but he's there at 15. He'd be good. Big defenseman with a heavy, tremendous shot. Chaz Lucius, a good old American boy, probably the most skilled of any of these players that I'm about to name. But again, both of these, not the greatest skater, but in terms of just his deception and his scoring ability, Chaz Lucius is up there with anyone. And then you have Cole Sillinger, who's one of my favorites. Sam Stern, you know, who I know you guys are talk with, he loves Cole Sillinger as well. Some question whether or not he'll be a wing or center. I think he'll translate to a center in the NHL and is probably the best pure scorer of anyone in this mix and probably has the best snapshot in particular of anyone in the class. We spoke about Atu Ratu before. And then there are two centers who I would love to trade back for and take in like the 20s. And they're like the prototypical Ranger centers in terms of all the fucking rhetoric we've heard recently about what they're looking for. One is a Russian center named Fedor Svechkov, who is, you know, I jotted down in my notes, he's the most prototypical Rangers prospect of this bunch. High IQ, always in the right position, strong two-way game, suffocating on defense, you know, always working hard, but then also a good possession driver, good playmaker. His knock is he's got a decent shot, not too much power for it, and he's got one of the worst one-timers I've ever seen in my life. And then a guy who I feel like Ryan's going to love this guy because of his name. His name is Francesco Pinelli.
Francesco Pinelli!
He's another late riser and kind of like Svechkov. Does a lot of things right, but nothing phenomenal, really. You know, more of a playmaker than a shooter. Pretty crafty, high IQ, good passer, but will never like jump off the screen. Good 200-foot player, has that grit and all that nonsense that everyone says that the Rangers are looking for. But again, if you're talking about, you know, centers that you can take in the 20s or so, like you could certainly do worse than this player. And all these guys I just named, I think will certainly be NHL centers in a few years, some more NHL ready than others, but just a bunch of names that I wanted to throw out there for people to keep in mind. And you'll probably see more about them in whatever I'm going to write in the next couple of weeks.
Hold on. You said Francesco Pinelli is Russian?
No. Fedor Svechkov is Russian.
I was like, hold on.
Francesco Pinelli is Canadian.
I'm going to call some bullshit for a second here. Francesco Pinelli is Russian.
No, Francesco Pinelli is Canadian.
I still have some questions.
Like Canadian name.
Yeah, like, if it was like Francois Pinel, I would have believed that he was Canadian.
Yeah, no, Francesco Pinelli is a center for the Kitchener Rangers in the OHL.
Uh-huh.
And he's a guy where you'll see ranked anywhere from like 15 to 35 when you're looking at various rankings.
Gotcha. My final question for you, Drew, and then I'll let you go. How high does your blood pressure rise every 6 weeks when Ryan decides to just tweet, you know, I don't know why Alexis Lafreniere isn't a center?
There's a lot of things Ryan tweets that makes my blood pressure rise. I don't know if this one would be on the top three or five.
I think I've actually changed my opinion.
Ryan, what are you doing?
I think Kako should be the center now. I'm just saying.
Whatever you say, buddy. I love you, and I'll just keep it at that.
Drew, cannot thank you for joining us enough. Love you so much, and you should follow Drew if you don't. Anything you want to plug, buddy, other than the rankings coming out?
Nah. Like I said, me, George, and Rich are working on it now. Probably end of June, you'll see our rankings. I'll be putting out the next Highsmith Memorial Trophy article at some point before the draft. Like I said, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Drews_Way, DREWS_Way. And guys, thanks so much for having me on. I always have a blast. And, thanks for everyone for putting up with the sounds of my son in the background.
So, Declan, we said goodbye and good night. Thanks, Drew. We'll talk very soon. We're back.
What happened? I'm sure Drew was great.
He was great. I couldn't believe he thought we were getting Atsurati at 15. That's wild that he said that.
Wow. What a guy.
All right. Let's do some questions real quick, shall we? This is from David. Do the Knicks getting schwacked in the first round of the playoffs mean that MSG curse has lifted again and we have a great season for the Rangers offseason? Or a great Rangers offseason, rather. No.
Mostly because... No. I think it's just that simple.
I think the curse is still on us. We'll get it back in season next year. Let's see. This is from K-Bomb 30.
I think the key here would be if the Rangers trade for Eichel and Randall doesn't extend with the Knicks, then you know it's switched again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or if the Knicks, like we all saw today, and I'm sure other people saw it too. If the Knicks trade for Kelly Oubre and extend Kelly Oubre.
That's a yes.
Yes.
The curse is back.
Curse is back. The first round playoff exit is not indicative of the curse.
Agreed. K-Bomb 30. The Rangers target any of these three Maple Leafs UFAs this summer. Riley Nash, Zach Hyman, or Alex Galchenyuk. Hyman will definitely be on their list. And Hyman 100% is going to seemingly going to hit free agency from everything I've read from sad Leaf fans at this point in time.
Yeah, it sounds like they offered him a team-friendly deal, and he told the team to friendly go fuck themselves.
Yeah, so it seemed that way.
Let me put it this way, though, Ryan. I see a scenario in which one of Zach Hyman and Pavel Buchnevich is a New York Ranger on opening night. I do not see a scenario where both are.
I can't agree with you more.
Yeah, so I think Hyman is something the Rangers investigate if and only if Pavel Buchnevich is used to address another area of the roster.
Could not agree with you more. This is from Holmes. Greg, can you walk us through the finer points of drive-by posting? I got to go, but we'll definitely check back with your insight.
It's very easy. If I think someone says something stupid, I'll be like, that sounds stupid. Here's why. And then I'll just continue with my day and not revisit the conversation. That's it.
Was this brought up from something that you said?
There was a conversation about the Shifley hit in the Discord.
Got it. We didn't talk about the Shifley hit. Seems like it was intentional to me. But
the hit is intentional in terms of Shifley intended to hit him.
Correct.
I don't think Shifley intended to put Jake Evans in the hospital.
Also agree.
But that to me, like, the premeditation is Shifley is going to skate as fast as he can to hit this guy. That's premeditated. I don't think you need to slice it any further than that and say it's only premeditated if he intended to hurt him. That doesn't mean, like, I can intend to shoot you, but I don't want to kill you. That's just called, like, you know,
attempted
murder. Yeah. Not murder.
Yes.
So it's, I don't know. That's essentially.
So would Tom Wilson pull his fist back after the first punch on a Tanner Panarin's face while he was on the ice? That was an attempt.
Did Panarin intend to smash Artemi Panarin's face down into the ice? Yes.
Yes.
But did Tom Wilson intend to kill Artemi Panarin? I don't think so.
Oh,
but I might also be giving Tom Wilson too much credit. that was the essentially the entire conversation, where I think it's ridiculous to try and split hairs about whether you think the only thing that makes something predatory or premeditated is the desire to injure someone. That's not it. Shifley began going down the ice with the intent to lay a massive hit on Evans. And he did it and resulted in an injury. And that shit needs to get out of the game. And big open ice hits happen all the time. Most of them don't happen from 190 feet away.
I do.
That shit was just unnecessary too, from start to finish.
Couldn't agree more. I like Shifley, the player. He's always seemed underrated in this league. Drew, I know, is a big fan of his, but I will say if he was a Penguin or a Bruin or something that wasn't the Jets, I don't feel like he gets 4 games. I really don't. And maybe that's just because I've just been so disenfranchised with the Department of Player
Safety. Oh,
you're
saying it would have been less if he was on a marquee franchise.
Yep. I would say you get 2 games if he was a Bruin or a Penguin or something like that.
Or even if he was just a Canadian and he did that to a Jet.
Correct. Absolutely correct. I just, Wyshynski was saying, that seems like they're throwing the book at him at this situation comparatively to everything else that's happened this season. Like, if you take the Shifley hit and put it next to the Tom Wilson incident, Tom Wilson gets nothing. Shifley gets.
Well, that's really the crux of the problem with player safety, right? It's not that we're unhappy that Mark Shifley got X amount of games. It's that this Mark Shifley incident happens because Shifley is operating under a mindset and a rule set that it's unlikely he will get seriously suspended if something goes wrong here, because the big time offenders haven't been punished. So why would Mark Shifley go into that hit thinking,
who's been clean his whole career pretty much?
Right. I don't think he had
they say clean record on the report before they ban him for 4 games.
Right. So Shifley's going into that hit being like, I've essentially played this game as correct as one human being possibly could, and I've seen what people who don't play this game correct get. What's the worst that could happen to me here? That to me is, if Tom Wilson gets properly dealt with, or Nazem Kadri gets properly dealt with, or any of the situations that happened leading up to this situation happen, does Mark Shifley think about it before he does it? We don't know the answer. It's a hypothetical that can't be answered. I would like to believe that he would. There's a very good possibility that he wouldn't. The problem is, you're punishing. It's like you're picking and choosing who to punish.
Yep.
Whereas you should be punishing everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From this.
Yeah. I can't totally disagree with you, Ryan.
Yep.
I would like to believe that wouldn't happen, but also I think that me saying that is giving the Department of Player Safety
too much
the benefit of the doubt when they haven't earned it.
Couldn't agree more. Our good friend George Obrinsky says, Greg and Ryan, if Eichel becomes too rich to actually get, which I don't think will happen, by the way, that's not what he said. That's my words. Thoughts on Kuznetsov as a trade target?
Well, just to touch on Eichel, since we last talked, doesn't it feel like the price has dropped again?
Significantly. We talked about Nils Lundqvist and Eichel extensively on the BSB OT last week. If you want that, you can go to patreon.com/BlueShirtsBreakaway. That's where it's hosted now. Because Nils Lundqvist, we haven't talked about it yet, surprisingly, and I'm sure we spoke about it with Drew, but he's signed as a New York Ranger. And
maybe we spoke about it with Drew. What do you mean, maybe? We definitely spoke
about
it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we brought that up. My apologies. Yeah, that was a great interview with Drew. We love that guy. Real smart. Yeah, so it does feel like the Eichel price is dropping drastically.
By the day, almost. Yeah.
Drastically. I don't know why that
because
is.
Because it sounds like, I'm sure you listen to 31 Thoughts, or at least
I do.
Follow the right Twitter accounts that listen to 31 Thoughts.
I follow NHL quoted. Watcher, yes.
Yeah. We should have that guy on too. That guy,
he crushes.
That guy consumes so much NHL media.
Crushes.
Like too much. He doesn't consume us though. We don't ever get quoted.
Yeah, doesn't ever say Greg Kaplan.
What
fuck
yeah.
The Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah. What's going on, NHL Watcher? We're consistently top 10. Why aren't you listening to our show and just quoting us?
It's true.
Just because I'm not TSN 1280 letting Pierre Maguire say the 27th dumbest thing he's ever said in his life. God, doesn't mean that the dumb things I say shouldn't be quoted.
27, that's generous. All right. Kuznetsov.
I don't know. The Kuznetsov one is an interesting one to me because I both like him, but feel like the four-year commitment to him is a little different than other players. And it's, I can't really thread the needle.
It feels like something
already,
you'd be happy.
29.
You'd be happy year one, right? And then maybe year two, second way through, he might not
I'd
be
feel
the
same
player.
Way. Well, I just feel like I'd feel the same way about Kuznetsov as I do about Kreider. It's like, do I dislike having that contract on the books? No. Do I think I'm overpaying the player? Not really. Do I think I could find better value? I think so. Like, it's tough. I think Kuznetsov really is just in the perfect situation. I think he's on the perfect team with the perfect roster around him. I understand that he was essentially a loose cannon this year with COVID-19, and I understand that that man likes to have a good time, which I am down with. But
New York would
not
be the best time for him. I mean, or it would be a really good time for him. Sorry, but yes.
Right. A good time for him. Maybe not a good time for us. I don't know. I
don't feel comfortable paying $8
million. Yeah. It's the length more than the contract value with Kuznetsov is what really pauses me because it's just like, I'd rather have Kuznetsov than Strom. That is for sure. But I'm really not convinced that I love the idea of that contract over the next 4 years. I would need to be sold on it. He's a good player. He would make the Rangers better. All these things could be, you know what he's like? He's essentially the Gerard Gallant of trade targets. I can't sit here and say the Rangers won't be better, but I can sit here and say it wouldn't really excite me.
I'm with you. Final one from Chris from Florida. With the Leafs choking again in the playoffs, do you see them trading Matthews, Nylander, or Marner to shake things up? And with the Rangers getting involved, what would you trade? I would trade a lot for Matthews, like a shit ton.
I don't need Nylander. I like as a player, and Marner, I actually don't. The Rangers, to me, just aren't in the market for Like, the Rangers have Nylander in my mind already. I don't think they need – if the Rangers are trying to shake up the top six, I don't think Nylander is the guy to shake it up. I think they have that already. He's not adding a different element to the game. I will also say, if the Rangers want Nylander, it's not a bad move. He's an exceptionally talented player. The Rangers should be in the business of just getting exceptionally talented players. But I just, to me, what I mean is, like, I just, if, again, just like I have, I can't quite convince myself that the Rangers are actually going to spend a lot of assets to acquire a defenseman. I have a hard time believing that right now they're going to spend a lot of assets to get another winger. It just doesn't.
And that Matthews square peg doesn't moving, fit in my period. Round. I would trade a shit ton for Matthews. Yeah, yes, he'd be one of my favorite people to cover ever if he was on the Rangers.
I would trade as much for Matthew. I understand that McDavid's the better player, but from a I need to cover that guy perspective, I would trade as much for Matthews as I would for McDavid.
Couldn't be like
an unlimited amount of resources.
Correct. I want to just give a quick shout out to our Patreon subscribers who keep this show going. Alex Gartner, Amber Cohensberger, Ben Waters, Brian Doyle, Broadway Blue Shirt, Blue Bleeder, I'm killing it, CJ Stellwagen, David Siegel, Dennis Deitch, Eric Stagg, George Obrinski, JD, Jimmy Mack, Chris in Florida, Lazik Gronkowski, Pavel Kodorov, Ryan Stephen Lomier, oh man, he's going to kill me, Stephen Lomier, he's going to text me, whatever, Stig Bull, Swinegard, Tommy O'Neill, Tori from Manhattan, the legendary Tori from Manhattan, Vinny Hay, and Will Spector, thank you so much, we could not do the podcast without you, for real. I think that's it. The Drew interview was great.
I paused that time because I didn't know if we were actually ending this time or if you were just transitioning
to
a different part of the show.
No, that we're ending now. Yeah. So I'm going to say goodbye. For Greg, for Ryan, follow me at Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Busher. You can follow Greg at, oh my God. Follow me. All right. We follow Greg at Busher. We'll be back next week or later this week at BSBOT. Goodbye. I love you. Bye.